as I am changing. Every single move you're making since I've analyzed predictions far beyond the comprehension. I've been tortured with the writhing thoughts that stop a star from shining. Kill me now before I'm sober, so I die before it's over.
Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Men in Tights podcast. This is a very special episode. It is my conversation with Joseph Harris, who I met on Threads. It was a great conversation that we had. We talked a lot about wrestling, talked about comic books and superheroes, talked a little bit about anxiety as well, and it was great having him on the show. And without further ado, here is my conversation with Joseph Harris. So, how are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing good. Just got home from work a little while ago, so I'm just still kind of unwinding right now. But yeah, so would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm Joey Harris, comedian, podcaster, YouTuber. I also work in college housing. So I actually live and work on a college campus now. So yeah.
How did you get into that kind of work?
When I went to college, I was an RA for 2 years. I graduated with a mass comm degree and had no plan after I graduated from college. Went and did a few different things, bounced around from here to there, and remembered that I really enjoyed my time when I was an RA in college. And at the college I graduated from, they had an opening in housing there. And I went in there and have been at it now for 16 years. Yeah, three different institutions. I've worked 7 years at a college in North Carolina, 7 years at a college in Maine. And now I'm back in Virginia, my second year to college there.
Huh. What part of North Carolina?
I'm originally from Macon, North Carolina. That's a small town in northern North Carolina. It's almost on the Virginia border. But the college that I worked at was in Fayetteville.
Okay. Because I used to live in North Carolina for, I would say, 13 years. I was in Jacksonville, the eastern part of North Carolina.
Yeah.
I went to, like a local trade school when I was up there from medical assisting.
Nice.
That was a pretty fun line of work. So tell me a little bit about your podcast.
I have two podcasts. One, the Cup of Joe Wrestling Show, is I call it it's a podcast for the wrestling fan on the go. So it's about usually between 15 and 30 minutes where I take a look at some of the biggest shows on the WWE network. Been doing that since 2020. And then I do another show, kind of like a variety show, where we talk wrestling, comic books, the MCU, pretty much anything. And that's the Joey Harris Show.
I have that on my Apple podcast rotation. Just I'm behind on so many other podcasts that I haven't gotten around to actually listening to an episode yet.
I fully understand that. I was catching up on your podcast today, actually. I'm a few episodes behind, but I pick and choose some episodes, just because there are just so many podcasts and good podcasts now that are out there. So I know you said you lived in North Carolina for a while. Where are you at now?
Right now I'm living in Florida. I moved down here in 2021. Living in St. Cloud, like just a little bit outside of Orlando.
Gotcha. Yeah. Some friends and former coworkers of mine that live in that area. They live near Disney.
I have a few friends that that I had known while I was in North Carolina. Then not that they actually lived up there, but just I was, good acquaintances with them while I was there, and that they moved down here recently. And a few friends from high school that have moved down here in recent years as well. Because I originally grew up in Queens, New York, so lived there for the first 22 years of my life, then moved to North Carolina because at the time, you know, my family and finances were what they were. So had to downsize and relocate, and we got set up in North Carolina. And then other things that happened along the way, like life happening, probably the best way I can say it, is what brought me down here now.
I fully understand that as someone who has also had life happen to them and have done the downsizing thing. I was out of working in college housing for about 3 years. And when I left it, you know, the prevailing wisdom was it won't be any to find a job. And that was not true. I struggled for about 3 years, and I said, you know, I enjoyed the housing work. I thought I was good at it. And so I took where I was living at, drew a circle, and applied for every job within 1,000 miles, and finally got a job in Bangor, Maine, which is 986 miles from where I was from. So just right on that outer edge there. And yeah, moved up and a Honda Accord filled with boxes. And that's kind of like the starting over point. And I've had a couple of those in my life. You know, what really drew me to your podcast and your profile on Instagram and Threads was the overall theme of it, I guess, where whether it's wrestling or video games or comics, MCU, whatever, to tie in that mental health aspect of it. Because I know for myself, wrestling and comic books have long helped me through moments in my life with that, because it's always something like, with wrestling, it didn't matter how bad my life was or was getting, I could turn on a wrestling show and just kind of turn that part of my brain that was overthinking everything off and just enjoy it. And I've always loved that.
Yeah, I'm very much the same way. I started very, very young. I want to say my earliest memory probably would be, because I just recently turned 37, so give everyone an idea of that.
Yeah,
I would say around 1990 is probably my earliest memory that I have of wrestling. Like, I'd say like around like the time of like, I'll say around maybe WrestleMania 6 with Warrior and Hogan.
Right, right. Well, that's, you know, that's funny because I didn't become a fan. I'm older than you. I just turned 46, so I'll let everybody do the math on that. I actually became a fan. I had seen it, you know, in and out, not really a huge fan, until the following year, WrestleMania 7. I can't remember what it was, but for some reason I was out of school. I don't know if it was spring break or I was sick or something. My best friend, someone had recorded it for him, and he let me borrow that tape, and I just became hooked. And at the time, being from a small town, I remember for some reason we didn't even get WCW for another year after I started watching. I got 1 hour of wrestling a week, and it wasn't even one of the bigger shows. It was Wrestling Spotlight, which is like their C show that kind of covered what went on the other shows. But for that 1 hour a week, like I said earlier, you could just like just turn that part of your brain off and just enjoy.
Yeah, that's kind of how it was back for me back then, and even still it is now. Just especially like after a long day at work or whatever else was going on, you can either just put on an old wrestling show or put on something on YouTube, like of the highlights of whatever show that I missed during the week, and just clear my head and just enjoy whatever I'm watching. Which, like, that's what I did last night, because I got out of work, say around 10:30, got home around like 11-ish, just as Raw was ending. So I just caught the highlights after that as I was drifting into sleep to catch up on everything else that happened on there. And wrestling, it's for me, it's always been a good like escape from reality, which I mean, a lot of forms of entertainment can be that way. But for me, wrestling was always like that first, you know, especially being so young when I started watching it, like this, having my imagination just run wild with it, especially with the colorful characters that they had back right. in the early 90s, especially, you know, and like having characters like Doink the Clown and, you know, Earthquake, Typhoon, all these other people that just being at such a young, impressionable age, like 5, 6, 7 years old. Right. You know, of course, at that age, you're going to gravitate towards those larger than life, over the top characters because, you know, you're still learning about a lot of this stuff and that catches your attention almost instantly. You know, it wasn't until much later on, as I'll say like around like 11, 12, 13 years old, that I started to appreciate more of the actual art of it, of the storytelling and the athleticism and all that.
Right. And I think that you, and for maybe to a lesser extent myself, you were the right age that when you caught on to it, young, impressionable, and you had those larger than life heroes. I enjoyed it because I went to college. I tell people the first time I had cable was when I went to college. I went to college August of 1996. The NWO had just started. Austin had just won King of the Ring and was going, you know, getting more and more popular. And everybody knows what happened there. And it was just a great time to be a wrestling fan. I couldn't get enough. Now, there are times though I'm like, I'm so overwhelmed because you can literally watch wrestling nonstop and never run out. Now, and I'm thinking if you had told me that when I was 13 and I had 1 hour a week, I would have just, I don't know what I would have done.
Yeah. Yeah. And this, because yeah, my brothers and I, we used to always talk about when we were younger, just having like if they had like a channel of just wrestling 24/7, 365, that would be the dream for us. And I mean, while it's not an actual channel, now we right. have that with the WWE Network for the last 10 years now. First with the network, then now having the WWE content on Peacock. But and it's just, you know, no matter how many certain, especially like some of the older pay-per-views, I can watch them over and over again and never get tired because it takes me back to where I was in my life when those shows had originally happened. And it's become like a tradition every year, especially like this time of year when it's WrestleMania time, that right. my brothers and I will rewatch a lot of the WrestleManias, and not in chronological order, just whichever one we're in the mood for that day. And then as it gets closer to the actual date, we'll watch like the ones that are like the most important to us or the ones that have meant the most to us.
Do you still get excited for things like WrestleMania?
I do. Yeah. I mean, there was a period of time where I wasn't as excited or as into it, just for whatever circumstances going on in my life at the time. But this, especially in the last few years, and I think it's also because for a long time, while I was in North Carolina, I didn't have my brothers to be able to watch wrestling with, because that was always our thing that we bonded with. But right. in the last few years, because it was one of my older brothers, that he's the reason why I'm in Florida now. And I get to watch all the shows with him again after so many years of not doing so. And now it's like that adds that excitement to it, because like now it's like now I'm not the only one watching it. Now I'm able to share this experience with family again. And that's one of the things that I really cherish most about wrestling, how much it brings me and family and some friends that I remembered in high school that we were all really into wrestling together. And it's just the community of it is something that I just really appreciate and love. And I'm happy that I'm able to have that again. And like what would be some of like, you know, I know you mentioned like around WrestleMania 7, but like, what are some of the earlier wrestling memories of yours that you really, you know, you tend to gravitate towards when you have those nostalgic moments for wrestling?
I'm currently on my podcast, I'm trying to go chronologically mainly through the 90s. I started the podcast in 88 and now I'm in 93, but I call it taking a quantum leap approach to it because I also go into 2016, 2011 and all of that. I'm currently in the middle of 93, and just remember, because if you think about it, that was kind of a down point in the business, but it was such a high point for me for being a fan, because ECW was coming on, and just the Raw had started, and just whenever I could watch any episodes of that, it comes back to me. So I'm kind of, as a supplement, I'm going through Raw from 93, and I've just reached the point where they're having the battle royal to determine who's going to be the new Intercontinental Champion, who's going to fight to become the Intercontinental Champion after they had suspended Shawn Michaels, and just things like that. Because then I'm thinking, okay, got Survivor Series coming up in 93, and then that leads into everything with Michaels coming back, going into the ladder match at WrestleMania 10, just thinking about that, and then going in the next year in 95 and then redoing it for SummerSlam, and the, you know, Diesel becoming the champion, and then Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels, and then kind of going away from the whole Hulk Hogan Ultimate Warrior model and all of that, and then Hogan going to WCW, and then everything that happened there, and the rise of the NWO.
Yeah, because when I was looking at threads a few minutes before we got started, I saw that one of your posts was about a Beach Blast in 93.
Right.
Yeah. And because I've been also trying to rewatch a lot of the older WCW stuff, because I used to watch the weekly shows growing up, but I didn't watch a lot of the pay-per-views. There were certain ones that I do remember watching. I can't remember the names of them. I remember just some of the matches. Like, one of them was, I want to say it was 95, 96. That it was a double steel cage main event, Ric Flair versus Macho Man and Hogan versus the Giant.
Right.
Yeah. I didn't remember exactly how the matches were. I just distinctly remembered that this is where Liz turned on Macho Man for the first time.
Right. Yeah.
And joined up with Flair, and that was her, turning heel for the first time. And I just distinctly remember that, because, you know, like a lot of fans, I was so invested in the Macho Man Liz story from the WWF. And to see her turning on him was just like, what is this? This is not supposed to happen. She's not supposed to turn on Macho Man.
Right, right. I took it and thought back a few years, is that is a perfect story if you just take their WrestleMania appearances. You get kind of their introduction with WrestleMania 2, then that great match with Steamboat at WrestleMania 3, him going through and wrestling four times to win the tournament at WrestleMania 4, then the whole turn and going up against Hogan with Liz, whose corner she's going to be in 5, then her being in the corner of Dusty and Sapphire versus Sherry and Savage at 6, and then him losing the retirement match to Warrior at 7, Sherry turning on him, and then Liz coming and then reuniting, and kind of like a coda to that is him winning the title from Flair with the whole Liz subplot there at the end. And then you would never have thought you were going to see her again, and then they reunite in WCW only to have her turn on him, and it's one of those what is happening here moments, and you realize, okay, this is not exactly going to be like it was when I was growing up. It's kind of like they've thrown the script out the window.
Yeah, and that was the other thing, because, you know, especially now as an adult, always hearing the people like, oh, you know, wrestling is fake, right? When I was a kid, I didn't know what any of that stuff was. I didn't know of the backstage drama that people love to talk about now. Right. I was just a fan, and I was watching his TV show, enjoying it, believing the stories, believing in these characters. And like, did you have a moment like that where if everything clicked, where I was like, oh, this is entertainment. This is not a real thing that I'm watching, kind of. You know, not to say that it's not real, just
right. No.
You know what I mean. Yeah.
Predetermined. I found out more in my life that people will go out of the way to make sure that, you know, it's not real. I'm like, yes, I know it's not real. I've been in the fight. It lasts, what, 30 seconds, a real fight, and you hurt your hand and all of that. I think what it took for me was just realizing that it's, it's a very clumsy phrase, but for lack of a better word, it's kind of like the male soap opera. It's got those moments, and you want people to keep coming back. In the old days, it's, you wanted them to come out and see it live because that's how you made your money. And now it's, you need them to come back every week to see what's going on. And you have those emotional moments. Just in the past few years, I was hearing, actually, I think it was on your an episode of your podcast. I was listening to your guest saying things like Becky Lynch becoming the man, or Kofi Kingston finishing, you know, doing that rise of Kofi Mania. And 10 years ago, Daniel Bryan and the Yes Movement, the shock everybody had when the Undertaker streak ended. All of the drama that's going on now with Cody Rhodes and the Bloodline and all of that. It's just one of those things where it always comes back. This is something I know that I can go and I can get invested in the drama, but at the end realize that it's all, part of a story to entertain me, that I can be entertained. And because let's face it, the last 4 years have just been insane, and we all need something to say, okay, I'm just going to, real life is hard enough. I need something just to focus on for the next 2 hours, 3 hours, what have you.
Yeah, definitely agree. And I mean, speaking for me at least, I would say wrestling has done a good job of being that escape these last 4 years, especially, and especially in the last, I'll say, 2 years, well, more year and a half with Triple H running the creative. Right. But I feel like there's been more emphasis on this, on better storytelling and showcasing the unique characters that they have, and not always having it be just the same people all the time, and allowing stories to breathe a little more and have the long-term storytelling. And like I would say, like the example of the storyline with Bayley and Damage Control, and how that was a slow build over several months to where now Damage Control is against Bayley going into WrestleMania with her match against Io for the women's title, and how that has been such a long-term story building from when they first showed up in 2022 at SummerSlam, and just the slow, the little moments here and there of dissension that have been thrown, sprinkled across, not just, you know, having everything just right in your face and it's just one and done within a couple months. It's been that slow build for the last year and a half. And all the stuff that I've always heard about Triple H, that he's been big on storytelling as well. So, right. You know, he's, of course, he's going to put the emphasis on that. And then especially with showcasing a lot of the people that he was always so high on when he was running NXT, getting to see a lot of them being showcased better now than they were in prior years. And like I've said, like on the Koj, who was on my last guest on here, how conversations he and I have had where we agree that Triple H has made women's wrestling in WWE shine brighter than it ever had before, especially in the wake of all the Vince McMahon stuff that,
right,
we, a lot of it people had known about, yes, but the more details that have been coming out in the last 2 years is just insanity. And who, not knowing how that story is going to end at this point, at least we have Triple H there to kind of steer the ship in the right direction with the creative of the company, in at least.
And from everything that I've seen and read, at least, yes, he has bosses that he has to answer to, but they will kind of allow him to do what he is seeing as far as his creative is going, and not showing up and tearing up the script 30 minutes before you're going on air, which we know that Vince McMahon has done in the past when he was, yeah, he was running things.
Yeah, he was, yeah, very notorious for, they have the whole story planned out for a week, and then right before showtime, forces everyone to rewrite everything in 3 minutes. And that's how we, a lot of times, we get jumbled up kind of shows. Like, I would say most recently with the Raw after Mania for last year, how that was all just last minute rewrites, and majority of the fan feedback I saw was not positive. I mean, I had to work that night, so I didn't get to watch it live, but I saw the feedback online.
Right.
And whereas you see it now, especially with all the PLEs under Triple H's creative, have been more positive response than negative. Although you will have your detractors and your haters here and there, which, I mean, that's their prerogative, that's their right.
Right.
And, nothing wrong with that. But just me personally, I'm feeling an excitement in the WWE product that I haven't felt in maybe 20 years. Around WrestleMania 20 time that I kind of compare the hype that I'm feeling for WrestleMania 40 to what I felt back then with the main event, especially with the Triple H, Benoit and Shawn Michaels story, right, with Eddie and Kurt, the return of Undertaker to fight Kane, the build up to the first time of Goldberg and Lesnar, even though that fight one didn't turn out the way we would have hoped it would go. And then all the other stories along the way, like Rocket Sock versus Evolution, and just, the long-term storytelling building up into that WrestleMania. I feel like we're getting a lot of that into this one.
I think you're right. And I had not even thought about it until you said that. It seems like they've got a real momentum here that they kind of get every 10 years. And you think about back to WrestleMania 30, everything that was going on, like I said before, with the Daniel Bryan stuff. And then we didn't realize it at the time, but the Undertaker's streak ending, and Sting wrestling Triple H, and all of that. And just coming out of last year's WrestleMania night one with Sammy and Kevin Owens winning the tag titles, and then going into night two and everything that was happening there, I thought that they at first had really fumbled the ball with Cody not winning last year. But then the next night you pick up where he goes in with Brock, and they kept it going, and have kept it going through so many different twists and turns that I'm really excited for this year. It's also the first WrestleMania that I'll be attending live, which I'm really excited for.
Yeah, I was hoping that I would have been able to go, but just life and finances being what they are. But now the plan is wherever 41 is going to be next year, that's the plan for me now, to go to that one. Whether it's going to be in Vegas or Minnesota, whichever one is the one that's locked in, because those are the two front runners that I keep hearing about. But that's my plan now to, I guess, finish my story in that respect for WrestleMania.
Gotcha.
Because 20 years ago, when it was going to be for WrestleMania 20, it was going to be me and my brothers all going together. But just, things happened where ended up not three of us not getting to go. Then my other brother got to go to WrestleMania 33 here in Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
And, so now, I'm the one that's missing out of the three of us not getting to go to WrestleMania. So that's, my next goal is, I got to go to Raw last year, where the one that was main evented with Becky and Bayley in the steel cage.
Oh, yeah.
So now it's having that wrestling bug for the first time in so many years going to that show. It's now I want more of it. So, they have, NXT over here as well that I've been trying to get to go to. But I know that there's a whole process with that now, where you have to get on almost a waiting list, and they email you. So I've been on that, and I would get the emails for it, but then it would be a week before the next show, and it's I'm already scheduled to work that night, so I'm not going to be able to go, and I can't get out of work. So that's another thing I have on down the line, to go to an NXT show, because seeing it on TV is one thing, just the atmosphere and the energy that you can clearly see on an NXT show compared to Raw or SmackDown. And I want to be able to experience that, because if watching it, it reminds me of some of the Ring of Honor shows that I used to go to in New York, and just the more intimate environment and how high energy it is from start to finish with the fans. And I want to be able to experience that on a WWE kind of product this time around.
Oh, I can definitely understand that. And I'm assuming that they're just going to announce the location at this year's WrestleMania.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too.
I know that they announced SummerSlam for Cleveland today. So that should be interesting. And I'm thinking that I've heard this. I don't know if this is true or not, is that they try to do like West Coast, East Coast, and then somewhere in the middle of the country to give, you know, people at least, you think one out of every 3 years you'll be close enough if someone doesn't have unlimited funds that they can get close to it. So I would think they would probably go for the middle of the country since they were out in LA last year.
Yeah, I would assume that too. Kind of explaining it that way, actually, it does make a lot of sense. So, you know, East Coast to West Coast and then down the middle. Because they went from, they were for in Tampa for 37, then Texas for 38, and then in California for 39, and then back to East Coast here this year with in Philadelphia. So yeah, it makes sense that they would kind of go that route.
And I have no insider knowledge, but I would bet anything within the next 5 years they're doing one in England.
Yeah, that's the big one that fans are hoping that it's going to eventually happen. And if I'm able to even go to that one, I would love to go to it, because, you know, even just going to Europe in general is a bucket list item for me. Especially to an overseas WrestleMania would be the ultimate dream for me now.
Yeah. It is on my bucket list to go to Europe, but also to go to Japan to see. I've said just to go to Japan to see wrestling.
Right. And it's like, so you would like want to go to like Wrestle Kingdom at the Tokyo Dome or something
right.
like that?
Right.
Yeah. That would be a great one to go to. Cause that's another one where, yeah, it's a big stadium show like this. That is New Japan's version of WrestleMania, but it still has that high energy of like the more intimate, kind of like almost an ECW kind of, you know, raucous kind of crowd, and, you know, and how they're all so invested in into the stories and the characters on those shows too.
So I know you said that you went to several Ring of Honor shows back in the day, and I also listened to your podcast episode where you kind of reflected on going to, what was it, the first pay-per-view?
Yeah, their first 3-hour pay-per-view that they had, Respect Is Earned, in 2007.
I am just getting into Ring of Honor now. I've had the Honor Club for a little while and would watch just stuff here and there, as that people would say. I'm going back at the beginning and trying to watch as much as I can from the beginning on to see how it goes on. And I've enjoyed it. I know that they're doing something the Friday night before WrestleMania in Philadelphia, but I'm like, I don't know if I just can't. There's so much going on that weekend. I may bring my Fire Stick and just watch it in the hotel room.
Yeah, there's definitely something for everybody during WrestleMania weekend, whether it's going to SmackDown in the Hall of Fame right after, or I'm trying to remember what the show, I know it's, I think it's like, it's a super card of honor or something like that.
Night. Yeah. But then you've got the, was it Stand and Deliver? Is that the show?
Yes. Stand and Deliver that Saturday afternoon, and then night one and then night two for WrestleMania. And then there are after WrestleMania as well as the other one.
Right. And there's also, I know Game Changers doing something in the area. WrestleCon is, I believe, at the ECW arena,
right, or
the old ECW arena, and WrestleMania, whatever their version of what they call used to call Access, I think they should call it something else now. There's just so much to do there.
Yeah, because I think I've mentioned it also in a past episode that when they did used to do WrestleMania Access, and it used to be like a traveling road show for a few years, that I got to go to it twice, 2007, then in 2008, and that was only just like a small snippet of what it's become like now, with the whether it's called Access or whatever else it's called now,
right?
And because I got to meet a few of the wrestlers at these, and they would have like little booths where you can take pictures and other stuff like that. But I know at the actual, you know, going to the ones that they have at where WrestleMania is happening, you get to have all the endless wrestlers there, yes, get to see actual matches sometimes, getting to see some of the actual like ring used props and gear worn, some of the old championships that you don't see anymore, like, and then just even the community of people that you get to interact with there as well. Like, you know, like, again, going back to the community of it, that's, you know, that's the thing that I really enjoy about it. And that's really why, especially when the Ring of Honor shows that I went to, the, you know, that one, I would compare it to like an ECW kind of fan base where, like, yeah, they watched the WWE, they watched TNA at the time, and now we got AEW, but they are so hardcore into the Ring of Honor product. And then, you know, I think I described the t-shirt that I wore was similar to the one that the guy had in the Beyond the Mat documentary for ECW's first 3-hour pay-per-view.
Right.
Like, where it just said, like, you had the WWE and WCW cross out on the back, and I kind of had that too on mine, where it was the WWE logo and the TNA logo with X's across of them, and then just a hand-drawn Ring of Honor logo on the front, because I didn't have any legit Ring of Honor merchandise at the time. At the show, I got a few shirts over there. I think it was 2 Ring of Honor shirts and then an old CM Punk shirt that they were selling from Ring of Honor over there, mm-hmm. which I wish I still had that, because that was one of my favorite shirts for a very long time. And yeah, I enjoy the community of wrestling when it's in the positive sense. I should specify that, really.
I fully understand that. There is a clip that's going around. You may have seen it, you may not have. There's a wrestler, and his name is, I'm blanking on it right now. He's going up to do a shooting star press, and he realizes when he gets up there that the ceiling is very low. And he just says F it and goes to do it and hits the ceiling and then comes down. It was on one of those like botches type things, and they're like, oh, look, there's nobody there, and he's doing all this crazy stuff. I was at that show, and they're showing it because that's where the camera's from. It's full back behind the cameras. It was a local wrestling company in Maine, Let's Wrestle, as part of Limitless Wrestling there, and it was their version, card that was kind of like their version of the Royal Rumble, and this was like a scramble match before that, and so you get a lot of negativity a lot of time online and Twitter or X or whatever they're calling it now can just be horrible. I still have it because I do get a lot of good wrestling news on there. It's pretty much the only reason I have it now, but it can get so negative. But I remember that actual event, everything was so positive. You know, the fans and the other wrestlers were worried about this wrestler. He was okay. He continued the match. In fact, he kind of went on that night during their version of the Royal Rumble to do the Kofi Kingston spot, you know, jumping from place to place and all of that to avoid getting eliminated. So, but the overall, when you are there in the crowd and it's a positive crowd that is into the wrestling, there's nothing like it.
Yeah, this it's definitely a unique community to be part of, and just like it, you know, to sound too cheesy, but it does feel like a family when you're there, because even if you're not cheering for the same people, you're all there for the same reason. You're all there to see the same people, and you know, you're there to have fun. You know, like, yeah, they might boo the person that you're cheering on, or you might be booing who they're cheering for, and that's okay. You know, we're all there to enjoy ourselves. It's a community. We're all there to have fun.
Absolutely. And I've never understood the people that either watch or go to events kind of to hate watch it. I've got better things I could do with my time than to, you know, hope that this company fails or this show is bad or that we go to boo the wrestling. If you don't like it, there are 800 other choices every single night that you can do. You can watch YouTube or the network or any dozens of streaming services that has wrestling. Find something that you like. Just don't go and hate on something that somebody else likes.
Yeah, I agree. It's, and you know, the idea of people that like to hate watch on things, like best example I can give is like the Marvels that came out, you know, in November.
Oh, yeah.
And then on Disney Plus, people that are hating on it without watching, or they watch it and just so they can hate on it. And I finally watched it when it went on Disney Plus, and I thought it was an excellent movie. I know not everyone's going to agree with that, but that was just my opinion. Went in completely blind to it, had no preconceived expectations for it, and I loved it. I enjoyed it a lot more than I did the first movie, and I even liked that one too. So just people that watch things just to hate on it is just such a waste of time, energy, and I don't understand it, because it's like, what are you trying to achieve by doing that? Like, what is your goal in watching something just to talk trash about it? Like, what are you expecting to get out of that? I don't understand people who do that.
I don't either. And in fact, you came up with a perfect example of that. My wife and I, we both really enjoyed the Marvels. It flowed well. I felt like it didn't drag. And we really enjoyed the scenes with the alien cats. And yeah, how they were getting the people off of the ship. I just thought that was incredibly funny. But you're right. There are so many people that are hate watching that or commenting on it without seeing it, that it's horrible. But it sets up so many things for the future.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, because I had posted my little short review for it on an Instagram post, and then one of the first comments was saying, like, all right, heard a lot of bad things, but I'll give it a shot. And it's like, yeah, I'd heard a lot of bad stuff too, but I was not going to let that influence my choice whether or not I was going to see the movie. I'd been planning on seeing it regardless of what other people thought. And that's, you know, I mean, I try not to let my opinions on some of these things dictate or influence anybody else. I mean, I might want it to inspire somebody to check it out for themselves and form their own opinions, but I don't want to be the one that's like my opinion of it, whether it's a positive opinion or a negative opinion, to influence how you're going to feel about it. Like, cause I don't think, like, because my opinion is just my opinion. I don't want to have that power over somebody else's opinion on something. You know, like, I'm just me. I'm not, you know, like, I'm not God or anything like that. I don't have that power on anybody. You know, I'm just one man sharing his opinion on something.
Right. I can understand and appreciate that. I feel the same way. Life is too short to go and not enjoy something that you're watching it just to, I don't know, put that product down. Go find something else to do with your life. It's too short. And as I said earlier, the last 4 years have been tough on all of us. So go out and find something that you can, enjoy and creatively let off some steam.
I agree, definitely. Like, how do you like to, you know, let off some steam whenever you're feeling those kind of days?
Oh, I listen to a lot of podcasts. I also listen to a lot of audio books. I like to exercise, so I'll go for like a quick 15 to 20 minute walk, and then go and put on an episode of like a comfort show. I've seen probably every episode of Seinfeld 5 or 6 times, but I'll still enjoy it, just unwind, or one of those old wrestling shows that, you know, you can count, you know, all the moves, you know, all the commentary word for word, but it's comfort. And that's what we need in this time. There's a lot to be said for nostalgia, and I like to take advantage of it, because I remember, I'm watching a show, I'm like, oh yeah, I remember that. I was 15 and in my bedroom watching that show. And it takes me back to that time.
Yeah, I do that a lot too. It's like my usual go-to show. It's been a while since I really watched it, but like the one I would usually go to because of how much of an impact it had on me as a child was Batman the Animated Series. And yeah, I can say, yeah. I would say I've seen the entire run of that show at least 5 or 6 times. Mm-hmm. You know, and especially when it had the old DC Universe app, and then when they had HBO Max and now Max, then right. I would rewatch it a lot on there. And there's another YouTube channel that I subscribe to, The Film Junkie. He has a little side show on there with somebody that they recap all the episodes of all the DC animated shows from the 90s, and I've been, you know, rewatching it with those two, and just, you know, remembering, yeah, like you to your point, like remembering where I was, you know, in my life, watching some of the stuff when it originally happened, and just going back to that place mentally and just feeling that nostalgia and enjoying it, and just remembering, I guess, like a simpler time in life when, right, you know, like that all I had was just this moment watching this, and that's all that mattered to me. And I feel like if more people would get in tune into that part of themselves, there would be less hate in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
And I feel like that's also a kind of a good segue. You mentioned about the with comics and the MCU. Like, how did you get into that as well?
With comics, growing up, I was aware of, I'm sure, like Superman, Batman, and all that. They had the old Super Friends cartoon on with all of that. But I changed schools in fifth grade, and my new school, the guys in my class, they were getting out of comic books and was like, hey, do you want to read this? And they'd hand me a comic. And then I think I bought a lot of comic books from them for like, you know, 5-10 cents a piece. And that's how I really got into them. And they were all Marvel kids. If they had been into DC, I'd be more into DC. I'm trying to get more into DC now, but I grew up a Marvel fan because of that. And I was would just have my stack of comics that I read over and over. And going back to that, again, those stressful moments, we all have those moments in our lives where you've had a horrible day, and was something else that I could do was go and read a comic. I'm actually now going back through and reading Peter David's run on The Incredible Hulk. And because there was a comic that I read over and over, and it was one of those in his run. I didn't know Peter David. I just knew that I liked this issue of the comic, and actually hunted down that issue years later. I've actually got it here. It's The Incredible Hulk 343, it's from May of 87, I think it is. But it's, again, another one of those things where this is simple and it's innocent. You know that there may be violence happening in this comic book, but it's contained to the page, and the eventually the hero is going to win out. And that storytelling and the simplicity of it really attracted me to that. And again, another outlet to kind of put away the craziness of the world.
Yeah. Yeah, for me growing up, I had a lot of the comics I did read were from my oldest brother, and I would say he mostly had Marvel comics as well. And on my own time, I've been more into DC, but I'm trying to get more into reading actual Marvel comic books, because my number one favorite comic book character is Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. I mean, Superman is kind of a very close second, but I don't have enough of the Marvel comics, especially Spider-Man comic books, to really speak to a lot of that. Because especially from growing up, for me, a lot of it was watching the animated series, like whether it's the old Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends or the 90s Spider-Man cartoon that used to air on Fox. Like those are my experiences and my exposure to the characters. And then like for like, you know, characters like Batman and Superman, my exposure to them was through the Christopher Reeve films or the original Michael Keaton films there, mm-hmm. there in 89 and then 92. And, you know, then would read some of the comic books later on and watching some of the animated series and animated movies, you know, like watching old reruns of Super Friends and Batman the Animated Series, watching the old Adam West series as well. When they would have, I used to see reruns of that on, I think the local CBS affiliate when I was growing up. And just, again, kind of going back to what I said before with, you know, watching wrestling at a young age, being drawn to these larger than life characters that, you know, at that age were like, might as well have been just like, you know, like mythical gods to me, pretty much. And just, you know, kind of aspiring to be as great as some of these characters are, which is funny because I feel like that's why I gravitate more towards Spider-Man, because, you know, to quote from Spider-Man 3, he's just a nerdy kid from Queens, and that was me, nerdy kid from Queens. Mm-hmm. So that's where I feel that connection to him, and where, especially because it's like, yeah, he was the result of a, you know, a freak accident of a scientifically, you know, a modified spider, but in the end, he's still just a kid.
Right. You know?
And I feel like that's, you know, why I love in the Into the Spider-Verse movie where, you know, they said that, you know, anyone can wear the mask, you can wear the mask. That I feel like that's what kind of the whole point of Spider-Man is, that Spider-Man can be anybody, that he can be you, he can be me, mm-hmm. because it's more of the human being within the superhero than the superhero itself.
Right, right. Before I started doing the Peter David run on The Incredible Hulk, I was reading the first issues of Spider-Man from the 60s. I got through the first 60 issues or so. And you can see a lot of that. This is not a guy who's got it all together, has no problems. No, he struggles and all of that. It's more of the, yes, he's got these fantastic powers, but he still struggles and has to go to class, and he's worried that he and his aunt are not going to have enough money to pay for her medical care or pay the bills. And so he's got to sell these pictures of Spider-Man, and you can really relate to that, or at least I can. Okay, I've got problems. This guy's got problems. He's not got it all figured out, even though he's got this fantastic power.
Right. Yeah. He's like the everyman kind of character. Like, even with having these, you know, these fantastical powers, and, you know, being able to do these extraordinary things that a normal human being shouldn't be able to do. Like I said, again, in the end, he's just a human being, really, with problems that all of us have. You know, paying the bills, keep paying the rent, trying to find a steady job, you know, love life problems,
right?
All relatable stuff that people. And I made the comment, I think it's to somebody on Threads as well, or I think it was just a regular comment on Threads that I posted, that like the Mount Rushmore of superheroes is Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, and Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. And most people agreed with me. I mean, I'm sure if I spoke with like a diehard MCU fan, they might disagree with me, and they would say no, the Mount Rushmore is Iron Man, Captain America, Thor, and whoever else. That's fine. But I mean, for me, the reason why I picked those four specifically is because of the cultural impact that those four have had, not just on comic books, but in the world. Because you can go to any country in the world, whatever language that they speak, you show them the Spider-Man logo, they know that Spider-Man. You show them the shield of Superman, they know that Superman. You show them the bat, that's Batman. They recognize them instantly. You know, Iron Man, maybe because of how popular the movies have been. Captain America, probably, but all the other characters, like, they're not going to know Ant-Man on first look. They're not going to know Black Widow or Hawkeye, and but they'll instantly recognize Batman, Superman, Spider-Man, and Wonder Woman. And mm-hmm. And I know you mentioned about trying to get more into DC. Like, what is your experience with DC Comics, whether it's the comic books or with the movies and TV shows?
Growing up, it was a lot of the like Super Friends. I was just out of kind of the cartoons right when Batman the Animated Series came on. I think I was then, I don't know, I was doing something with school, or I'd just gotten my first job or whatever it was. I always missed it. You know, was interested in seeing it, but always missed it. would catch the Adam West series on. I was thinking back today, I was writing something and flashback when I was 5 years old, I broke my arm and there was a problem with it. And they wanted to hold me for observation overnight in the hospital. And I thought it was so cool because I got to watch an episode of the old George Reeves Superman from the 50s. So things like that. And then, of course, going to see the Christopher Reeve movies and going to see Batman 89 and then Returns and all of that. But I had never really gotten into the comics. And I'm trying now to think, what was it? It was so I started getting like, for lack of a better term, some of the well-known comic runs. So I read The Long Halloween and I read Nightfall, and I really enjoyed Crisis on Infinite Earths, Infinite Crisis, Final Crisis, read all that. I really enjoyed the one after, I wanted to say, after Infinite Crisis, where they did 52. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, there's no Superman, Batman, or Wonder Woman for a year, and some of the lesser known characters step up. I really enjoyed that. It was kind of, I told my friend, it was kind of like watching a TV show, because it was like previously on 52, and then at the end of the comic would be like in the next issue and all of this, and learning things about lesser known DC heroes. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, I've been trying to get into it. I think I have a few issues of the 52 run from mm-hmm. DC, and I have a few of the Rebirth ones. I read the deluxe edition volume one of Rebirth. I've read that a few times. They have a few of the other issues that I haven't gotten into, and like I have because most of my comics are DC, so I also have Dark Knight Returns. I have Watchmen, Batman Year One, and trying to think, because I also bought an anthology thing that they released around the time Wonder Woman 84 was coming out. Yeah, that had different comic books that featured her fights with Cheetah, and I think Maxwell Lord is featured in some of those issues. I don't remember. There's the Joker graphic novel that came out a few years ago as well. I have not touched that one yet. There's Batman White Knight, I think, is the other one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because like most of the comics that I remembered reading while growing up, I think it was like the one that I think first made an impact on me was Death of Superman.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Like reading that one when that came out, I would say 1993, because like up until that point, my knowledge of Superman was just the movies and a few of the comic books and maybe some of the cartoons, but then reading the Death of Superman comic, and I'll say it was 1993, so I would say I was maybe 6 or 7 years old, I want to say, and seeing Superman in that form and that condition by the end of that comic book, that had such an impact on me that I didn't know what to do with myself pretty at that point.
Right.
Yeah, because like when you're a kid and you see, you know, Superman like so weak and, you know, and dying, and pretty basically it's like you're just kind of like questioned, like if Superman can die, then you know, what does that mean for the rest of us, kind of thing. You know, because Superman is supposed to be, he's like superhuman, he's supposed mm-hmm. to be almost immortal. Yeah,
right. And that was, I remember that, even though I wasn't really into, I was kind of getting out of comic books by that time. That was everywhere. I mean, it was on the nightly news. You'll never guess what DC is doing. They're going to kill Superman, the death of Superman. It was everywhere. And it was kind of like that phenomenon. And I was, again, getting out of comics right when they were having kind of this renaissance to carry them through the 90s. And you had all of these big events. I remember the backlash when they did Death in the Family, and like, I'm sorry, you're actually killing a character. And they had the whole you would call a 900 number, should we kill Robin or not kill Robin, and all the pushback that they kind of got from that, but you were getting into the area where this is not your father's comic books anymore. This is something big time.
Yeah. And it's funny, yeah, because I was too young to be reading some of the those more mature comics that they were releasing during that time, but I still read them anyway, because again, that's, you know, the fun of having an older brother, you know, easy access to some of those stories that I shouldn't have been reading probably. And but yeah, that's, yeah, that I'm that's another thing I miss, you know, having that, you know, being in that little stage of innocence of like, you know, like I know I'm not supposed to be doing this, but I'm gonna be doing it anyway. And yeah, it's yeah, I'm happy to have, you know, lived as long as I have so far, and I hope I can live much longer. But just, I do miss having that, being of that, like that young kind of naive stage of, you know, the age of innocence, I guess is probably the best way I can describe it.
Right. Right. No, I fully understand that, because it is exactly that. It is a more innocent time. You won't have to worry about getting up and paying the bills and making sure you've got grown up responsibilities, I guess, for lack of a better word. You may have had like chores or things that you could do, but you know that you had this thing that you could go to, whether it was watching wrestling or watching the Batman cartoon or reading a comic, that is such an innocent thing to do. And it just floods you with good feeling, or at least it does me.
Yeah, it does that for me too. Now, getting your thoughts on this, like with the MCU, I mean, how invested have you been with the MCU?
Pretty invested since the beginning. I was actually reading last night about where they think that they might go from here, but also the early days where they were banking on an actor in the early days to kind of kickstart, who was really on making his comeback, but they had, you know, farmed out all of their popular characters to keep the lights on. Marvel did. And so they're starting over with Iron Man, who's well known, but he's not their most well known property of Marvel. They had, like I said, they'd already farmed all of those out. And then I remembered watching it. I went and saw Iron Man when it was kind of at the second run theaters. And just after the credits, Nick Fury coming in and says, I want to talk to you about this thing called the Avengers Initiative. And I'm like, oh, wow. I thought that they're really going somewhere. And I was hooked from that point on. And I try to go to see most of the movies when they're in the theaters. I don't catch all of them, but I know I can get them on Disney Plus within a certain amount of time. I am excited of where they're going from here. I was getting a bit of burnout though. Felt like there were so many things coming at you all at once. Right. And it's like, okay, do I need to see this before I go see this, or can I enjoy this on its own, or what have you? I was getting a bit of that, but I feel like that they've kind of course corrected and are in a good space where they're not going to overwhelm you with things coming out from here on.
Yeah, I can definitely agree with that, because it was becoming a lot, especially with, you know, when the pandemic happened and a lot of stuff got pushed back a couple of years or so. And it's like 2021, we had like how many Marvel movies that came out within just three or four months of each other.
Right.
And it was, and the only one that actually went to theaters to see was No Way Home. Because, I mean, you know, that was like the big event film since, you know, the first big event film since Endgame.
And, right.
You know, of course, everybody wanted to see, are we going to get the three Spider-Men, you know, like we've been wanting for so many years.
Mm-hmm.
But then since then, like we've had the Ant-Man Quantumania. We've had Thor Love and Thunder, Doctor Strange and Multiverse of Madness. Wakanda Forever and all the others and along the way, Guardians Volume 3, and just, you know, I don't want to say oversaturation of content, but it's just, it has been a very pretty overwhelming with all the different movies, plus the shows that they've had on Disney Plus, like Loki, Falcon Winter Soldier, Ms. Marvel,
right,
the Hawkeye series, well, What If, She-Hulk, and so on. And we still got plenty more coming along the way as well. Like, we still have Daredevil Born Again. That's going to be coming out within the next year or so. And yeah, like I still haven't watched Echo. That's the last Marvel thing that I haven't watched yet. Eventually I will. Just I'm trying to catch up on other stuff that I've been behind on in these last few years.
No, I understand that. I just finished it a couple of weeks ago because I'm in the same, you know, position that you're in. There was just, if it feels like if you don't watch it right away, you get behind, and then you feel behind. Oh, do I need to? I need to watch this and this. So,
yeah, kind of the same. Also, with a lot with some of the Star Wars shows, because that's another big one for me. But it's like there's so many of those shows that I haven't watched. Like I mean, I know a lot of the plot points of shows like Rebels and Clone Wars and Bad Batch, but I've never seen them from start to finish. I've only seen a few episodes here and there. So right. I know I need to catch up on like 7 or 8 seasons of Clone Wars and then however many seasons of Rebels and so on. But like I've watched, like, you know, Mandalorian, Book of Boba Fett, Andor, Ahsoka, the Obi-Wan series, and all the other shows that have come along the way with Star Wars. But it's just those other ones, you know, in between that I haven't caught up on. And I've seen like other people that they talk about like the homework problem. Of like, do I have to watch this to follow what's going to come next, or can I watch this by itself? Like, as you were saying before, like, do I need to watch this show before I see this movie? Do I need to see this movie to know to understand what's happening on this show? And like, that's where, you know, where I'm happy that they're not doing so much, and especially in such a close proximity with each other, where it's like the movie comes out and then the show comes out like a week later, and then when the show ends, that's when the next movie comes out, and it's like you don't have that breathing room in between to digest what you've already watched and then prepare yourself for the next one, because it's this ends and then boom, it's on to the next one.
Absolutely. I for some reason I struggled to get through Andor. I don't know if it was the first few episodes, it kind of picked up towards the end, and then I go into Ahsoka and I'm like, I don't know who these characters are. And then I'm looking up, I'm like, oh, I probably do need to go watch at least a little bit of Rebels to kind of get caught up. So that's what I'm in the middle of now. When I'm on Disney Plus, I'm going back and forth. I'm also trying to go through all of the what I call the Marvel's Netflix show. I'm up to the Punisher. So I just go back and forth. I ping pong back and forth.
Yeah, that's another one I need to catch up on, because I'd watched the original run of Daredevil when it was on Netflix, but I didn't see the third season. I saw half of the first season of Jessica Jones, but I never got to watch Luke Cage or Iron Fist or Punisher or the Defenders. So that's the other homework I feel like I need to do, especially as Daredevil Born Again is going to be coming out soon.
Right.
Because it's like, again, I already know the story beats of everything that happened with a lot of the characters and the plot points and so all the stuff that ties into where they are now in the MCU, but, you know, whatever other little details that are going to be referenced in the new show, I want to be able to understand it better by watching the old ones, especially with Daredevil Born Again and how that's going to connect to how season 3 of Daredevil had ended.
Right. And then I look at it this way. I'm like, I already have anxiety about life. The things that I am supposed to be watching to enjoy should not give me more anxiety.
Right. I know you mentioned also with like how you kind of cope with a lot of stuff, and you listen to a podcast or or an audiobook. Mm-hmm. Like what are some other stuff that you could like maybe recommend for other people that when they're having like bad anxiety or stress out like that?
I saw the perfect thing the other day that says if you have one really good friend and you're having a bad time or they're having a bad time, you only really need 8 good minutes to be with that person to just explain it. So find you a person that says, hey, do you have 8 minutes to do all of that? And also find something that you enjoy that brings you no stress at all. If it's coloring, if it's reading a comic book, if it's, you know, watching old TV shows, find that thing and have it handy. So when you get that overwhelming feeling, and always give yourself, I like to call it, give yourself some grace. Don't beat yourself up. I know we can all be our own worst critic, but find something, if it's music, whatever it is, find something that you enjoy and take comfort and go ahead and enjoy that thing. Give yourself the permission to go and enjoy whatever that thing is.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And it's funny that you mentioned the 8 minutes, because Saturday night when I was coming home from work, that I actually recorded an almost 8 minute voice message that I sent to a really close friend, venting about how my night had gone, and just the relief I felt afterwards was exactly what I needed. So yeah, just having it, to your point, having that person to just, you know, let it all out to for a few minutes. You know, that's something that everybody should have. You know, it can be like a close friend, it can be a relative, or just, you know, just somebody that you have that kind of trust with, that you can spew out whatever for like 8, 10, however many minutes, and just have that release afterwards, because just that release is all that you need. And I've told like other people before, when I've done other stuff talking about mental health specifically, that I would say that a lot of times all we need is just somebody to listen to us, because you know, we have all this stuff bottled up within us and we don't know how to let it out or who to let it out to. And just, you know, we don't always need somebody to give advice, you know, which sometimes the advice is good, but just listen to us, say what we need to say, and that's all we need sometimes. And a lot of times I do that a lot, especially recently with some of the people I work with that are just a little too overwhelming and too stressful for me.
Right.
But other than that, sometimes I'll just read a book or listen to a podcast or listen to some music. Like lately I've been really into listening to classical music, find that to be very, very calming. Or sometimes I'll journal. That's another good outlet that I feel a lot of people can do. Like if you don't have that person available to you to let your feelings out to, just write it all out. You either like write it in a journal and just keep track of things, or you can just write it on a piece of paper. And then once you let it all out, just crumble it up, toss it in the trash, because you're just letting go of those feelings at that moment.
Absolutely. I'm a huge proponent of journaling, and getting any type of help that you need. And sometimes it is as simple as just getting it out, maybe to someone else. You're not looking to solve all the world's problems. You may not be looking to solve all of your problems. You're just looking for to get it out, to vent to someone.
Right. Yeah. Because like a lot of times we're not looking for the solution to the problem. We just need to release ourselves of the problem.
And, right.
You know, yeah. And I think that's, again, like, I feel like if we just had more people to just let their feelings out in a positive outlet, and, you know, doing it in a way that does not harm yourself or harm anyone else, that we would all just live in a much happier world, in my opinion.
Absolutely. That is something that I have seen, especially working with college students. We all go through so many things just in our day-to-day life. If you add everything that's been happening with the pandemic and then going through all of that, everybody is struggling with something. So, don't try to make it harder than it is. Reach out to someone and get the help that you need, whether it's through journaling or talking to someone or whatever that avenue is. Make sure that you do it so that you can continue to go through this craziness we call life.
All right. Yeah, just spread positivity is my opinion. It's the way I look at it. Just spread the positivity and just spread the love, because we need more positivity and love in this world. There's too much hate and anger, and that's just not healthy for anybody in any way, shape, or form.
I agree.
And I think that's probably a good spot where we can end it on a good high note to leave this one on.
I
really enjoyed having this conversation with you today.
Yeah, I had a fantastic time. Thank you so much for the invite.
I'm happy to. I would love to do this again sometime. Just anytime you want to come on here and just talk about whatever, just let me know.
Absolutely. And then I would also like to have you on my show, the Joey Harris Show, where we talk about any and everything. And we can talk about that later on. But thank you again so much. I really enjoyed it.
No problem. Yep.
Right. Have a good night.
You too. A very special thank you once again to Joe for coming on to the show. Had a great, great time talking to him about wrestling, comic books, superheroes, anxiety as well, and some of the coping mechanisms that we like to use in those situations. And if you would like to join in the conversation with us, you feel free to do so. I will have his information in the show notes, the description, his social media, his website as well. And you can also reach out to me on my social media, my Instagram, Threads, Snapchat, Vero, Facebook, my direct email, themenacitespodcast@gmail.com. If you would like to reach out to me to potentially be a guest on the show or just contribute to the overall content, you can also do so by checking me out on my Men in Tights podcast store over on TeePublic, or my eBay store, or my Poshmark store, and check out past Men in Tights podcast episodes and shows, my classic wrestling pay-per-views for WrestleMania 20, my conversation with KoJ, my conversation with Soda, with Allison Crow, Sean O'Connell, Venom Vlog, and so many other great people that I've been able to and been very fortunate to feature on here. And yeah, that's going to do it for this episode of the Men in Tights podcast. And I hope you all are doing well, staying safe, taking care of yourselves and your loved ones, being the wonderful people that I know you are and that you can be. And I am truly and genuinely thankful for all of you who watch, listen, and subscribe to the show. And if you're not subscribed, you know, just click the little button right there on YouTube. You got it right there in the corner, right there. Just see it right here on the corner. And if you're listening on Spotify, Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Podbean, and so on, just hit the little follow button right there and you can check me out on there so you stay up to date on everything that I do on here. And make sure again that you follow me on Threads at Men in Tights Pod, so you can get all the information of future episodes and future content ideas that I have coming on here. And yeah, this has been the Men in Tights Podcast. I am Julian, and I will see all of you on the next one as we're on the road to WrestleMania 40. Bye-bye.